You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
You know, it's pretty interesting. Like I was telling you earlier in the program and last week, our guest, Thomas Remington, he's got his master's degree and originally started at the council as a contract guy coming in on a contract. Now he's a regular member of it, and I think it's secured. What we're going to talk about is environmental impact and things on the fishery and all kinds of stuff. But it's also apropos because we want to get the word out, because it's imminent. If you're interested in this, you need to react. The U.S. Pacific Territory Fishery Capacity Building Scholarship Program. What's that all about? It's interesting. And we're going to talk about that because Tom Remington, at one point in time in his career, or in his study, had a chance to look at that and has put an end to this thing. It's kind of a convoluted thing, but I want to make sure that if people didn't remember you from last week or months ago when you were with us, what brought you into the trade? Frey, you're a California guy, right? San Diego.
Right.
And but I still think that, you know, when you are going to go to school and select what you want to be in, obviously we can cover that a little bit. But then there's also the harsh reality of what it's going to take to get educated and to get a degree and then to work in that field.
Yeah. School is not cheap these days, Mike. You know, especially having to move somewhere, go out of state for it. Yeah. And you need school for the sciences. Just flat and simply, if you want to be good at science, you need to learn more.
And I think, you know, I don't know if people understand exactly how long that took. You got your master's degree in San Diego.
I got my bachelor's in San
Diego. And master's here. That's where you came
here. Master's here, correct.
Altogether, how many years of college?
All those were about 6.5 years.
Well, yeah. So all of you that are four-year guys like me, that's not nearly enough. But interestingly enough, if you want to hang that, if you want to a title on your business card that wraps around it with all of the different, it's time spent. Obviously, you're still very, very, I guess maybe even shocked to say I did this. I got to where you know you're here now.
It's like a dream.
Yeah. So at what capacity do you have right now at the council?
So I've just been brought on as staff, so that means I'm a full-fledged staff member, you know, have my own program areas. I'm really engaged in assembling the annual reports. We talked about that for a little bit last week, but I'm also looking at things like habitat, fish habitat, what's essential for them, and ensuring that those are managed, those sites are managed well, and also doing GIS for the council, which is just making maps for them and stuff like
that. Okay, now let me tell you, earlier I was saying in the introduction, I'm glad he sort of gave it the right lineage. I wasn't talking about environmental impact, meaning from the mountain to the sea, but when we talk about the habitat, I guess there are some areas that are really conducive to a perfect lifestyle for certain species. And if you remove parts of those things for whatever, whether it be bleaching or taking or whatever, that's that species that used to be comfortable there no longer is. So where do they go? Or do they disappear?
Right. And it could be one of the two. So some species they shift their range, or some species end up dying. So a great way to think about it is just a coral reef, right? Mm-hmm. So a coral reef is an example of habitat.
Yeah.
And think about how that reef supplies a place for fish to live and all those other different organisms that live inside those rocks. So
what I'm blown away at, and maybe you can show that there are people in your field that are interested in contributing to that, it's amazing how forgiving the ocean is. Mm. I mean, it in some areas of the world, New York Harbor, you know, you couldn't see the bottom.
Right.
And now you can. If you take care of it, it'll turn around. Isn't it amazing?
It's amazing. Yeah. The capacity of the environment and Mother Nature to kind of rebound after, you know, we have admittedly not been the nicest over the past century.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I always laugh because people talk about, this is kind of an aside story, but they talk about the carbon footprint that we have.
Mm.
When they don't realize that there are volcanoes under the sea that are pushing out some pretty terrible stuff 24/7, 365.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and if you are going to stub out that one little campfire right now, I'm glad that you feel guilty that you're burning it and you don't need it anymore. But some people say, hey, why should I bother?
Right.
You know, I can't control any of this stuff.
And it's a balancing act. So while there's always, you know, the sea has its buffering capacity, it's always going to be with able to withstand some amount of something. Mm-hmm. There's always a tipping point, right? And we just want to make sure that we're not getting close to a tipping point, because
what I like though is even when you reach a tipping point in some species, now there's you know, some data to say that, all right, we can raise these things in pens,
yep.
and you can bring them out, and there's going to be some mortality, but you're going to you can restart something.
Yeah, things like aquaculture making big waves. You know, just because of the amount of fish that we're eating, it's not going to go down going forward, right?
Well, last time we were together, we talked about that.
Yep,
if you weren't with us last week, we talked about, say, Hawaii, for instance, is growing in numbers. Almost geometrically. Actually, I take that back. For the last couple of years, we've actually lost a little bit of population.
I didn't realize
but we're
that.
Still at 1.3.
Right.
Okay, now there was a time when there's 300,000 people here. You can't put a million more people here and not expect to impact the fishery.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just it's basic numbers, right? If there's more people want to eat fish, especially fish that is, you know, people see it as a local dish, as like a dish. You know, people come to Hawaii and like, what do I eat here that's good?
Oh, got
to
have that mahi-mahi stuff,
gotta
right?
Got to have the ahi, got to have the poke. So it's just, it's you know, for tourists especially, they come here to eat the fish.
Unfortunately, there's no switch in the fish department that says, okay, there's a million more people up on those rocks over there that want to eat us. We have to make more of us. It can only produce so much. Otherwise, it would even never stop it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's why, you know, management, it's not about saying no or do this, do that. It's about making decisions that'll ensure that everything's good into the future.
Is there a checklist when you get to putting on your scientific cap and you're going to go out to, you know, Kaneohe Bay and you're going to take a look at a reef and you're going to take a look at it. All right. This is the, here's the habitat that we think it should have. Here's what it's got. Here's how we can change it. Or are we every now and again to say, here's a perfect one. We can use this and we can go take this and try to duplicate it over there where it's not so good.
That's what you brought up, some good examples. So like, what you described is essentially a stock assessment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, what do we have out there?
A reef assessment.
Relative to what it could be or what it was. And so some people have been doing things like going to the northwestern Hawaiian Islands where there's not a lot of fishing, not anymore, especially with the monument. And they look at, what is the habitat out there like? What is the fish out there like? And then we look at ours and say, if no one was fishing, would it look the same?
Yeah.
And, you know, some people say yes, some people say no.
Well, if you take a look at, Thomas is talking about the Papaha Namokuakea, and that is interesting to me, is that one of the apex predators there is now ulua.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, maybe more than sharks. And when you see thousands of 100-pound ulus.
And they're massive.
Massive big things. You think, whoa, why are we eating these things? But more importantly, are they eating up their own habitat?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's strange because it's never as simple as you think it is, right?
Yeah.
So there's always more. It's like, oh, more big fish. It's great, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's like, well, you're never sure if the ecosystem's out of balance.
Yeah.
If there's no big predators to prey on those predators, then, you know, it
cascades. Case in point was at the end of the day when the final of the permits ended for the Papaha Namokuakea, there were like 9 guys.
Mm.
You know, I mean, what sort of an impact could they have had? Well, probably not much of one. However, if you'd increased that from 9 to 90, then you could have.
Right.
So what we're learning in those areas is this is a pristine, beautiful reef. Here's what it's missing. How do we get the science to get the stuff together to go fix this one that's all busted up?
Yeah, and then that's just about knowing like what is the maximum level that we can allow and make it sustainable is the buzzword, right? Sustainable.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just like what is the maximum that we can take, or what is the maximum that we can, you know, harvest while still ensuring that there's going to be some next year and we can harvest that same amount.
Yeah, and by the way, you and I that are listening out there are next year and the following year. In Thomas's job at the council, you got to look at 5 years and 10 years. What's down the road?
Mm.
How can we sustain this? And particularly if you take a look at, for instance, our longline fleet. It could have grown. It did grow for a long time. But now it's down to a much smaller number.
Yep.
I guess because of the catch effort and how far they got to travel, it doesn't make any sense to get into the business. But it doesn't make any sense to leave it if you can do well. So I want to talk not necessarily about the habitat there. But wait a minute. Let's do it. How do you describe the habitat when there's not a reef? In other words, what's habitat out in the middle of the ocean?
Right, so it's difficult for pelagics, just pure pelagic fish,
right? Yeah.
But then you get into things like there's seamounts, right?
Pinnacles, all that stuff.
Yeah, different banks that people fish on, things like that. You know, for trawling and a lot of bottom fishing especially, it doesn't matter what the bottom substrate, what the bottom of the ocean looks like. But it also is not just for the fish that you're catching at that time, right? It's about the habitat for the fish eggs of that species, for the larva. So it's like if maybe you're catching the fish out in the open ocean, but what if its eggs were in the reef and now that reef is gone? It has nowhere to
spawn.
It has no nursery area.
Yeah.
So well, we're not just looking at one stage of life. We have to look at the whole life cycle to understand if, you know, the fish is safe up until when it wants to be caught or when we want to catch it.
What I get a kick out of is when these guys travel, the distance they travel to fish, and they're looking for a pinnacle or like you say, an atoll or something. What you see is these fish are comfortable at a certain depth, but maybe there's nothing in that depth that they can eat.
Yeah.
You know, they got to travel very, very far sometimes to find food at that, because I don't know where the food is, how it's stacked in the column, but you think it's all in the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? So, yeah, whenever there's features, you know, mountains and stuff, there's always more stuff going on, currents interacting and movement. Yeah. So there's always just more stuff going on, more food, more excitement for the fish. You usually find even pelagics around stuff like that.
What I'm amazed at, we could do a whole program on this. I never even asked you your opinion on this, but there are a lot of people, a lot of these big fishing companies now that are deploying their own fads. Thousands of them. So, I mean, there's thousands and thousands. And a lot of them are derelicts.
Yep.
You know, they break free, they lose them.
Go forever.
And they just go forever until people run into them at night. But it is sort of interesting because that establishes a food chain, which normally wouldn't have held one.
Right. It's amazing. So it's just this little bit of structure, right, will allow fish to feel some sort of safety. You know, they want to put their eggs there. You know, larva grow up there. It becomes a nursery. So it just goes to show even the smallest amount of structure can support the beginnings of a fisheries food chain.
Yeah, I love that. We could do a whole show on that.
Oh, absolutely.
But what I want to talk about, though, is put a little urgency in. We started explaining when you're deciding your major and going into class and going into schools. It takes a lot. And to have the opportunities for some of the people in places like the CNMI in Guam and other places get a scholarship they can learn and then go back home and use their knowledge to help their environment or their families.
That's right. So the council works really closely with the local agencies in American Samoa and Guam. And so one of our goals is to build capacity for fisheries management there. They have their own state departments, quote unquote, you know, their territory departments. Yeah. So they're doing the same thing like the state is here, you know, making sure that everything's good near close to shore. We want to build capacity in the sense that, you know, the council offers scholarships to pay for those kids to go to school, learn about
here. Yeah,
so we have several students here that have strong ties to the territories. They're going to school for fisheries management, marine science on island or in the state. And then what happens for however many years they get funded, the council funds them for school, they go back to their territory and they work for the state department or the you know.
Yeah, it's a great deal because obviously, and a lot of them stay there. I mean, some of them, first of all, don't they have to make the promise? They have to live with it.
Promise. So it's like, if I'm taking 2 years of funding for school, I'll go work for two years for the Division of Aquatic Resources.
How does the word get out, besides programs like this, that it's even out there? Because I think it's not necessarily a student that would be listening to us, but a mother or a brother or a son or a friend or a teacher of.
Yeah, the students, you know, they don't always have direct channels to them. Like we communicate with the program directors at the schools and make sure that the marine science kind of programs are aware that there's these opportunities. I believe, so we have one that's active right now from last year, and, you know, we're looking to get some more applicants for March 1st. I think it's just less than a week from now.
Yeah, I should say it's now. And by the way, sometimes the decision gets, now that would be for school in the fall.
Yeah, for the upcoming academic year, 2019 to 2020.
Yeah. Okay, and to find out more about that, of course, you go to wpcouncil.org, and it's there. And what you're going to look at is the capacity building scholarship.
Right.
Yeah.
So capacity building, just in the sense that we're, you know, empowering communities and territories and states to do more fisheries management for themselves, to get more people involved in the field. Because even being a marine scientist when I was getting my bachelor's, I wasn't super aware of fisheries management or what the councils do anything like that.
Talk about some of the young folks that you've met that have come here to do that.
Oh,
I
absolutely.
Know there's a couple here now. We got room for one more right this minute.
Yep. Yeah. So that's why the scholarship is out and we're waiting for applications. But, you know, we have plenty of good examples of this. Even though I'm not from the territories, I am an example of this building.
Yeah.
The council invested in me for my schooling, and now here I am helping them out with projects.
But the interesting thing is that originally you got brought in as a contract guy.
Originally, they just helped me out with school. So they said, you can do this project for your thesis.
Right.
And then,
okay.
Like, the money we give you will go to your tuition.
Gotcha. That's great.
Yeah, it was fantastic for me.
How did you find out about it?
So what happened was, it was in applying to school, you know, I hate to say this, but it is somewhat about who you know. So my professor, my advisor knows some of the fishery council people and, you know, knows about the projects that they
and
want
probably,
done.
And probably had some, an inkling of what you were looking for.
Exactly. And it goes both ways. So the council is looking to build capacity, but then the professors and the students also want opportunities to get paid to go to school.
Of course. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's they're helping each other. So
I do know that some of the professors need to create the demand around their graduates. Mm. And so in order for them to stay in business, because, I mean, if all of a sudden you're teaching oceanography 2020 and nobody's going to work in oceanography after they get out of there,
right,
that your tenure is... So that means that they have a vested interest in ferreting out a kid or a guy or gal saying, okay, this person would be a perfect... Okay, Thomas, take a look at this. This is something you'd like to take a look at.
You know? Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, we have examples like the Capacity Building Scholarship. There is a... We have several examples of, you know, boys and girls that have gotten their degrees here, you know, one of the universities in state, and then gone back to the CNMI and are working for the Division of Land and Natural Resources and
I think, see if you agree with me, that being said, even if they had the desire, motivation, and energy to do that at where they are, they need to come. They need to go to school. They need to get away. You just can't get it.
School is needed. School is necessary, and it's hard because school is expensive. School is, you know, there's a lot of barriers of entry into school these days. So this council is just trying to do what it can to alleviate some of those pressures.
What does it mean, just for somebody to think about, at the level of scholarship? What is it? For instance, somebody from CNMI, they're going to be given a place to stay. They have to have skin in the game, though. I mean, what?
Right.
How does that work?
What do you mean in terms of skin in the game?
In other words, the scholarships that are coming up, what do they cover?
Oh, so they cover stuff like, you know, room and board, books, tuition, especially, more than anything. Just all the typical stuff that a scholarship would cover for an academic school year.
Yeah, and so that means that the student is already making a commitment because they're going to be at school full time.
Right.
So, and it used to be, and I remember in my day, you'd have to work. You'd have to work and go to school.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And in my case, you play football, you get partial scholarship. You work, you get some more scholarship.
Now everybody's taking out scholarships.
And then you beg your parents to get more scholarships. Yeah. But there aren't as many scholarships flapping around as there used to be.
Yeah, and there's just more students, right? The pool's so large.
But the reward at the end of the rainbow is that these people must go back. First of all, their families must be just super proud of them. And secondly, they can start producing, you know, results day one. They get into that office, they're going to have a job.
Yep. And so, you know, they come here, they've been working with the council for a year or two, you know, going to school, learning everything, like soaking up everything like a sponge. Yeah. They go back with this knowledge of the council and of how everything works and are really able to empower their own division, right?
So is that actually, they're going back to a government position?
Yes, with the territory, the state.
Right. Yeah, unless there's, of course, some people, I guess, learn so much that they become valuable to a commercial entity.
Yeah, some people.
You know, a lot of them. Absolutely, you know,
There's a lot of contractors out, too, that are, you know, independent by choice that just want to float around and go from council to state agency to whoever.
Well, we've actually met some of them. And when we talked with Dr. Molly, for instance, and others, I mean, for heaven's sake, she's in, you know, back east, she's in Gloucester, and you know, and doing
exactly,
stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, and the common thread. And Dr. Tam was the same way. Really, 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 really interesting guy. I'm sure you had some time to spend with them when they were here.
Oh, just briefly. Yeah, you know, so many.
So many
parts.
So when these scholarships, if somebody is interested in one, and every year I hope that we get somebody at least getting in there and taking advantage of this. Typically speaking, this is how long of a scholarship? A couple of years? A
couple of years, yeah. So I think the funding is offered for a year or two because it's for kids that are already in school, so it's to finish out. But yeah, still that can just alleviate a huge amount right there. So
yeah, and by the way, the numbers are frightening. Oh. I know that some of you out there watched this past week. One of our schools has been around for 95 years is closing. St. Francis is closing. And it turned out that the amount of money that they were charging for, you know, tuition was half what they needed to get the kid through this year. That meant that the entity just couldn't keep going. And it's such a shame to see something that had been there for almost 100 years.
And at a certain point, you can't ask the parents to pay more, even more and more. So, yeah, that's sad to see. But
Well, you know, one of the things, and this is why we look at CNMI and Guam and Samoa, like Tom was talking about. And if I didn't properly reintroduce Tom, Thomas Remington has got his master's degree and he is the fisheries analyst for the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. How many of you are there?
How many
analysts now?
Oh, an analyst. There's probably two by title total. Yeah. In terms of total staff, we have just over a dozen.
Yeah. Busy folks.
Yeah.
And that's why, and we've had actually the joy of talking to Josh DeMello lots and lots, and I know how close you guys are.
Yeah.
This is a well-oiled machine, but yet you have to understand, it'd be nice if we could just talk about nothing but the scholarship, but let's just talk about how everybody in your job depends on, there has to be government really convinced that they got to keep this whole thing called the councils going. So getting money and getting grants and all that stuff is big time part of what you guys do.
Getting money is huge. I mean, the councils have done a great job since their inception. You know, I don't think people remember back when they started, like, you know, it was in the 70s.
Yeah, it's 40 years. And I think because a lot of people, we take it for granted, they all know about Magnuson Act. They don't.
What is that before my time? Yeah, right. Yeah. But so I had to, you know, learn about this and find out that there was a lot of foreign fishing happening in the U.S. waters, and that it took something like Magnuson, that act in the 70s, to kick everybody out and kind of take control of our own management.
Well, it also, not only did it do that, but it also mandated that there's enforcement.
Right.
We quite often talk with a lot of guys about getting out there and getting everything enforced. I mean, that's a huge part of what the council is up to.
So, fishers might see that as a negative. They go, oh, I'm going to get a ticket, with more enforcement. But they don't realize that they're also enforcing other people encroaching on their grounds, a lot of foreign nations coming in and just fishing everything out from the U.S. waters.
Well, I think that it boils down to, and we come inshore waters here and talk about DLNR and licensing and all of that stuff. If you are a good steward of the land and you see somebody next to you burning trees and dumping things and you think, there's no consequences here. Why am I being a good guy and let this guy, you know, do all of this stuff? So that's what puts a lot of teeth in it. Isn't that sort of the same thing on the high seas?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And it's because, you know, if this person's not adhering to anything, you know, why should I? Yeah. But at a certain point, it's, you know, lead by example. And it's about personal responsibility in the sense that you know that your actions aren't contributing to the downfall.
Maybe people should know we need to reiterate this every now and again. The Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council is one of how many?
Eight.
And we are, in landmass, by far the biggest landmass.
By far the largest. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's so much ocean.
Yeah. And yet, there are certain similarities. I know when you all can get together, like if you had a chance yet to have any discussions with your counterparts at other branches?
In my brief time as official staff, only one.
Yeah.
But I know that there are especially meetings where all the council directors get together.
Can you imagine what that must be like?
Oh, man, I can't even.
Yeah.
They're also different, right?
Yeah. Well, and everybody says we're different, and that's because we all are.
Really? No, it's true.
And that's why it's very, very dangerous, particularly in, and we've seen this in both the Obama administration and now the Trump administration. There's a lot of people that don't understand the fishery, so they rely on news or they rely on, you know, on studies, and you're only going to believe the last thing you read.
Yep.
So once again, if people want to know more about what they can do, like right now there's some bills in front of the local session. Let's go into what we can find at wpcouncil.org is to learn, what should I be aware of? What should I know is coming?
In terms of
Restrictions, in terms of closures,
maybe not a closure, but there's talk of opening the BRFAs, which are the bottom fish restricted fishing areas. I know that's big.
That's huge.
The commercial license, the recreational license bill was shot down. I don't think that'll be revisited anytime soon. There's some bills about aquarium fishing, which is back and forth. That's more on the state level.
Interesting when you talk about that, because you talk about habitat, and I do know that the Kona Coast was a great source for commercial harvesting of reef fish.
Right.
And particularly aquarium fish.
Aquarium fish.
And ornamentals, if you want to call them. And they say, well, you know, what does it hurt taking them? Who eats them? Well, they get eaten. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there.
Right?
Isn't anything out there on the reef part of a food chain?
Yeah, it's all part of a symbiotic system. Yeah.
But they are part of a food chain.
You know? Yeah, so, maybe that's not the right path to take if you want to keep doing it. But, you know, in terms of, like, getting assessments and finding out that, you know, aquarium fishing maybe isn't as bad as it was once thought with the right techniques, you know, if you're not, like, throwing dynamite on the reef to catch all these fish.
No, it's way, way more selective than it used to be.
Right, right.
Particularly in decompressing them and knowing what you're doing. But the interesting thing is that a lot of these fish, they find out they can breed them. You know, there are a lot of guys that are very successfully breeding, you know, aquarium fish in farms. Now, they may not look exactly like that yellow tang, but they're pretty close.
Well, there is actually an example. Some of my colleagues at Oceanic Institute in Waimanalo.
Wonderful stuff.
They have grown yellow tang for the first time, I'm pretty sure, in the
world. I know,
it's
a big challenge,
huge. These were my some of my cohort, my classmates that were assisted with the project. Yeah, so I'm pretty proud of them.
And he had no idea we were going to talk about that. I've been watching that really, really closely for
a
while.
You? Good.
Yeah, because I remember as a small kid that we used to always catch, we always had, every one of us had aquariums.
Yeah.
And,
I had aquariums.
Yeah, and you know, and a lot of people say, well, you know, don't do that, don't do that. I think it made many of us appreciate responsibility, because if you have to take care of a fish, it's a job if you're a little kid.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's where I learned. I got to feed them, got to get the bowl, got to...
I remember one time my mother said, three of your fish are dead.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Didn't you feed them? I thought you fed them. No, it's your job to feed them. But what I'm getting at is that, you know, that is just one example that when we talk about that, because originally it thought that, oh, no, this is about aquariums. This is going to be that I can't go to the aquarium anymore. No, it's going to be that if you want to see aquarium fish, you'll have to go to the aquarium. Mm. Because there's certain things that are happening, say, at our Waikiki Aquarium that are just funded and studied and really important.
Yeah, and I, having worked for an aquarium in the past back in San Diego, I mean, I'm able to see what the aquariums do. And, you know, people can be mad that they put fish on display, but there's a lot of good research behind it, too. You know, they're learning about the species that they have there, and they're helping a lot of sick species as well, so...
Well, there's a big difference between, say, an aquarium and a tourist attraction.
Absolutely.
Even though they're one and the same in many, many cases. But I think that we're lucky to have the opportunity for people to do that. My dear friend is Dr. Andy Rossiter at the Waikiki Aquarium. And every single day, it's a hard job. These guys are doing a hard job. But every single day, their reward is seeing the kids and seeing them up against, you know, being able to be up close and personal with these kind of things. So, and that's why I want to point people again to wpcouncil.org so you can brag a little bit if you want to, Thomas, on what a teacher can do or what a teacher's aide can do, just going to that site and looking at what's available.
Yeah, there's a ton of great resources, even for teachers, for all, public of all sorts, brochures, little pamphlets, coloring books, posters.
By the way, it's not too late. There was a great collaboration this year between the YWCA Fernhurst about the moon, about Mahina. And it was really a terrific calendar that's out. One of the award winning. Everybody wants one.
Yeah, everyone wants one. We got lunar calendars. Beautiful artwork throughout. Mm. So we can pick one of those up.
It's getting to be, and interestingly enough, because I had a bunch of this stuff here in the office at the turn of the year, and it was pretty interesting to see all of the things that are done in other languages. That are done as part of the council, especially in Samoa and everywhere. You got this,
so we have the Chamorro for the people in Guam and the CNMI and Samoa. You know, we don't want the language barrier to stop people from learning about what the council does or how they're helping them, even in their far-reaching territories or commonwealths.
We may be a little bit late to really turn the water up for the scholarships for this year, but suffice to say that anybody that has a relative in Guam or in CNMI, they should know about these kind of things.
Absolutely.
And find out more about it. I would imagine that you're getting some of these requests coming in online from faraway places.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's just... You know, people are just interested just off the bat, but it's hard. So we try to stipulate, you know, got to have ties to the territories. We go into school here, so.
But you didn't.
No, I was different. It wasn't necessarily the scholarship. Yeah. I decided to come to school here, and then the opportunity really lined up in terms of when they needed someone to do a project in my skill set and my advisor.
There's a number of folks that have turned that way, and there's also people that were interns that went into the program that have become contracted.
Correct.
You know,
I work with one of them.
Yeah,
right,
and there's some of them are really good. The one there's this guy and a gal, I forget, and I'm sure you work with all of these folks, but they are just stoked because they control their own destiny.
Right, the contractor.
Yeah, and they just as long as you stay on top of things and you can produce, isn't it likely that the same contractor is going to be asked, hey, can you guys do this?
Yeah, of course. Know? So
I think in a proposal to do this.
I think you'll be talking to John Wiley in a couple
of
weeks.
John's great.
John. Yeah, okay, yeah. So yeah, he was in my cohort at school as
Is that right?
Yeah, so he was one of my classmates, and he went down the path of contract work but chose to stay there just for the flexibility and I think more field work.
I was going to say that I think it for some of y'all, it is a way to keep a bag packed because luckily you're going to be able to move from project to project. But, you know, it used to be, and I don't know if you feel this or not, It used to be that you'd work 25 years for somebody and get your gold watch and retire. It's not like that anymore.
No, careers are hard to come by these days. Yeah. So, space in a career.
Okay, now, but what about you? You're San Diego guy, Honolulu guy. Is there anywhere else that you might want to visit?
Oh, I don't know.
Is that part of the deal yet?
I've been here for 5 years and I love it so far. Yeah. So, I have no intention of packing up. And I think, this is where my working knowledge is, and it's where I really want to, affect change. So I'm happy here.
I think that one of the things we want to do, and the reason why the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council is a sponsor of our program, is one of our sponsors, POP and Fishing and Marine, of course, and the council, is they do this to invest in getting the information out so you know who these guys are. And that's why we keep pointing you at wpcouncil.org. It is a wonderful source. It's growing. I say this every time I get a chance, Thomas, and you ought to know this too. Everybody down there should know it. I get such great feedback from people that say it used to be a pretty static website. Mm-hmm. That there was, it was interesting, but it wasn't moving. And this thing is always moving all the time. Right. You can spend half an hour just catching up with stuff easily every week.
Yeah, and like I think I told you last week, the revamp that we're doing to our website, I'm not sure if it's exactly live in all facets yet, but it's going to look great, and it's going to be really easy to use.
And what now that we discussed the scholarships, what's next on your agenda?
Next on my agenda, so I'm actually ramping up for the 2019 annual, or the 2018, so last year's annual report, it's going to be done by June of this year.
Yeah.
So I'm probably going to be coming back a little bit later and saying, hey,
Let's compare the last couple years.
And I'll say, hey, this is 2018, this is 2019, how are you feeling about this? So that's what I'm working on, and it's going to, just be grinding away.
Nice to see you again, my friend.
Good to see you.
By the way, gang, if you want to know a little bit more about what's going on, drop me a line, themikebuckshow@gmail.com. TheMikeBuckShow@gmail.com. Actually, we're even getting some of the fishing into the Twitter. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, that would be good. Go to Twitter at TheMikeBuckShow. At TheMikeBuckShow. And once again, if you have something you'd like to hear on this program, it is easy. Drop me a line. To my Gmail address, TheMikeBuckShow@gmail.com. Have a great rest of your weekend. See you next time on Go Fish.